What's the most sustainable way to love fashion? It's changing the way you shop by shopping with The RealReal. The RealReal is the world's largest and most trusted source for authenticated luxury resale. When you shop with The RealReal, you'll find the luxury brands you love, like Prada, Celine, and Loewe, all for up to 90% off retail. And when you're ready to refresh your wardrobe, you can sell the pieces you no longer wear to fund your next new-to-you finds. Buy, sell, repeat. Guilt-free. The RealReal extends the life cycle of luxury by keeping coveted items in rotation. Sell to shop, shop to sell with The RealReal. It's better for the planet and better for your closet. Plus, during Earth Month, you can earn $100 extra when you sell with The RealReal. Go to TheRealReal.com to get started. Earn $100 extra during the entire month of April at TheRealReal.com. That's TheRealReal.com. Terms apply.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Good morning and welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with co-host and producer Stu Schreger. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. We're halfway through April.
I know. It goes so quick, right? It was so quick. So I had a little birthday dinner last week, and I went to Louis in Port Washington.
Oh, nice.
You know, I haven't been to Port Washington in a long time. A couple of reasons. One is it's west of where I'm normally traveling. I'm usually going from Oyster Bay to the East End, so I don't get west so much unless I'm going to the city. And it's kind of north. It's almost like Bayville. It's almost like, you know, kind of hard to get to and, you know, whatever. And I forgot what a cool little town that is. It's a beautiful little town, you know. And they have all kinds of... you know, the storefronts and stuff. But even when you get down towards that bend where you curve around to go to, you know, Louis or whatever, you can make that right on Shore Road and go up to Manor Haven. It's really a beautiful place.
It is. In the day, Finn McCool's or something?
Yeah, still there.
Still there. That was, there were a lot of New York Mets living in Port Washington at one point. Like, I think even there was a pitcher, Bob Ojeda, who during one of the Mets championship seasons was trimming his bushes and he cut off the tip of his finger.
Yeah, but that's terrible aim. You know, what's great about that town is that if you live there, you really don't have to go anywhere. They have everything, you know what I mean, from restaurants to, you know, bars, if that's...
Well, I actually had a business there at one point.
You did?
Diagonally across from the post office was a former... tire store,
uh-huh.
And my family had a manufacturing business in Flushing, and we set up a satellite office there, and we had that for many years. We were in the office products and school supply business, and we had some radio frequency heat sealing machines, so again, we had a satellite office there and for manufacturing and a sales office for our business. I guess most of our stuff we sold through distributors,
uh-huh.
And then we had a division that actually would sell directly to consumers.
Oh, cool!
So that their office was based there or whatever, but had the ability to spend some time in Port Washington, yes, just like you say, when you go down Port Washington Boulevard, there's a couple of things, police department stuff.
Yeah, you got to avoid them.
There's a bagel place. There's a lot of retail on that Port Washington Boulevard. Then you get into town where Main Street is.
Crazy.
And you make that left, I guess, going west, and a lot of cool different things. Train stations around there, I believe.
Yeah, it's right in the middle there, yeah.
And then when you continue on, you get to Louis and a couple of other restaurants right on the water. And as I said a couple of weeks ago, the parking lot just... I guess it's just west of Louis is where I did my proposal to my ex.
I know, you tell me. Val and I mentioned that when we were walking by, and I said, "Here, this is where Stu got gravel in his knees, right in front of the fire hydrant, just west of the pole, you know. Yeah, we had a little laugh at your expense, you know. Affectionately, I mean, not nastily. And you know, I worked there as a kid. I worked as, when I first got out of CIA 100 years ago, I worked at Manhasset Bay Yacht Club briefly, maybe for about, I don't know, 9 months to a year or something like that. And it's a beautiful place right on a bay. I mean, that whole area is just, I mean, the North Shore of Long Island is gorgeous to begin with. But, you know, once you're sitting on a waterfront thing and looking at the bay, it's just, it's great. I mean, you know, we caught a really nice night. It was last week. It was very, very warm out. I guess it was 80 in the daytime or whatever. And it got a little cooler at night. But you still, I mean, I was out there in a short sleeve shirt. I didn't have I wasn't cold. And, you know, we got there kind of early, maybe 7 o'clock, I think, something like that. To me, that's kind of early dining. But, yeah, we got there about 7 o'clock, and the place was mobbed. It was just, and it's great to see, you know, I whenever I see busy restaurants, I don't care who owns it or, you know, I'm excited for them because I know how painful it is when it's not. And I don't know, I think something might be popping here. I don't know if it's the economy. I don't want to get into the whole politics of it all. But I think something's starting to happen because last Monday night I was out at Amano and we were jamming busy, man. And I passed a couple of restaurants on my way out there. There's a clam bar out there and they were busy. Everybody seemed to be doing a lot of business. So last Tuesday when I got to Louis, you know, the place was packed. And Violet asked if we could sit outside. You know, and the hostess goes, well, I don't know, let me see. And she didn't have anything. So she took us to this one seat inside. And I don't really care where I sit in a restaurant, honestly. It doesn't matter to me. Would I prefer to be outside on a nice night? Sure. But if I can't go out, I can't go out, whatever. Anyway, kind of Val was going, ah, I'm really disappointed. I want to be outside. So she says, okay, maybe you can wait, for a table. It might be a half an hour, whatever. You know, I can certainly amuse myself, Stu, for a half an hour. They have a wine list there, right? So we said, all right, let's go in the bar. We'll wait and, you know, call us when it's ready, right? Well, anyway, I run into my friend Paolo, who's the sommelier there. And he says, what's going on? I said, we're waiting for a table outside. Ah, come on, follow me. He grabs two menus, took us to a table outside, sat us down, right? And he's so nice. He's, I believe he's Italian. I could be wrong on that. His name is Paolo. It's a dead giveaway. He's a very knowledgeable wine guy, sweetheart of a man. He actually dates one of my my wine reps, Barbara, who's a fabulous find for me because her book, she represents Angel Share and Pasmal, two wine companies, that, two wine importers that have tremendous wines. So I buy a lot of stuff from her. But anyway, so Paolo, I ordered a first growth Meursault as our initial wine of the night, and so the kitchen sent out. Go ahead. You look like you were going to ask me something.
We got to have a hard stop here. So I go to my wine menu, and it's got red, white,
don't forget the pink.
Rosé,
yeah.
and sparkling.
Right.
Where does Meursault?
Meursault is a French Chardonnay. It's a white Burgundy. So, and they're a little on the pricey side. So I ordered that, and then lo and behold, out comes, before we even order our dinner, because we're kind of, you know, a guy comes over, the waiter comes over, hello, I'm Maurice, here we go, I'll be your waiter tonight. Yeah, I know. Anyway, he was a very nice guy. I just wish people wouldn't do that. It just bothers me. Anyway, comes over, can I get you something to drink? Yeah, we just ordered wine from the sommelier. Okay, great. Are you ready to order? No, I just sat down. I wait till I have rigor mortis in my right cheek before we order. You know what I mean? So it usually takes me 20 minutes to figure out what I want to have. And it was a nice night, so we're kind of taking our time. In the meantime, the kitchen sends out. Somebody got wind it was my birthday, right? And, you know, they know me there, right? So I get crab cakes, lamb rack, and they sent something else out. I don't remember what it was. I think it was maybe artichokes and calamari or whatever. I don't remember. Anyway, on the house, you know, thank you for coming, happy birthday, whatever. So now I'm like, check, please. I'm ready to go, you know, because I'm stuffed here with the three appetizers. So it turns out we're looking at the menu, and we finally got to order. So we ordered a seafood salad. And, you know, calamari and shrimp and mussels or whatever, clams.
And like a vinaigrette.
Yeah, yeah. And then we had, what was the other? Oh, they have this like really thin little wafer-like round pizza with raw tuna on it, you know, with some kind of aioli or whatever. We had that. And then we decided to do something that I almost never do. And I'm trying to stay away from carbs a little bit because it's, you know... if I'm an Italian restaurant, I can't do it because I have to have pasta. But, you know, seafood place. And now everything is surf and turf. You know, it's all steak and whatever. You go to a steakhouse, it's steak and sushi, right? You go to a seafood house, it's seafood, sushi, and steak. So we ordered a steak. We ordered a, they say, what, 16-ounce sirloin or whatever. And with béarnaise sauce, which is, you know, the cherry on the sundae for me. And it was good. It was cooked perfectly and great, you know. Seafood salad, I thought, could have had a little more pizzazz to it. And I'm not knocking it was fine, but for me, I'd like a little more acid in that, you know, a little more lemon or a little more vinegar or something. But all in all, I got to tell you, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more fun, great high-end restaurant, especially in that area, than Louis. And I don't know if you know this or not, but the people that own Rothman's bought it a couple years ago and completely renovated it, and they put a stupid amount of money in there. I mean, the place is beautiful. It's drop-dead gorgeous, you know. So, and it, you know, obviously it's working for them because you couldn't get a seat outside. You know, inside you were fine, but the bar was packed, you know, the outside was packed. They had some tables inside. A very good night all in all, I would say, for the restaurant, which I was glad to see. I mean, I hate walking into restaurants or even passing them when they're not busy because I know how painful it is.
So that's very funny. You talk about Tuesday night and the crowd at Louis in Port Washington. Mm-hmm. So I'm driving from Belmore to Huntington. Mm-hmm. I had to take my grandson, Ethan, to basketball practice. Oh. Now, that's like going from the extreme
practice
South Shore.
Was in Huntington?
Yeah, there's a JCC or something.
Oh, okay.
So, but it was like going from the, you know, the extreme South Shore to the extreme North Shore,
yeah, sure.
You know? But we're driving through town. We're on, I guess it's Main Street or Jericho Turnpike or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's like a line waiting to get into Ben and Jerry's.
Well.
And I'm going, I guess it's just a beautiful night out and everything's like happening.
Mm-hmm.
So my grandson quickly Googles, it was free ice cream cone day.
Oh, really? Oh, boy. Hey, you know, they used to have a flavor called Dastardly Mash that to me was heroin, man. It was just, I remember they had one on the docks in Montauk when I had the restaurant out there in the early 90s, and my daughter would come out in the summers. You know, she spent 2 weeks with me out there, whatever. And, you know, we go there like once a day, you know, for Dastardly Mash. And then they discontinued it. I said, I single-handedly kept that, you know, flavor alive. I don't know what happened. And it was chocolate ice cream with chocolate chunks, pecans, and it was something else in there. Oh, raisins. Raisins.
Really?
It was stupid good.
That's like one of the travesties of life. I mean, growing up as a with Jewish soul food,
yeah.
My dad worked in the city, so there were a couple of really cool delis, and we went to Katz's in the day, they catered from Katz's, and then on Long Island, anything from a Hebrew National type deli in Oceanside and Long Beach and whatever. But the go-to was a corned beef on rye,
mm-hmm,
with celery tonic.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
And it's gone, or at least the diet version is gone.
Yeah, you know, nobody eats corned beef anymore, by the way. I can't give a corned beef sandwich away.
That's also an interesting statement.
They had a corned beef sandwich. Oh, I don't want to interrupt you here, but I'm going to, damn it, because you do it all the time. So they had a corned beef sandwich on the menu, on the appetizer menu. No, on the sandwich menu at Louis.
Really?
Yeah, it stuck out like a sore thumb. You know?
So again, growing up, and because I was a little chubby growing up, you know, I had to have this corned beef on thin rye.
I think there's a relationship between your chubbiness and your diet.
So thin rye was, they either just sliced it thinner or they took a regular slice and shaved it in half. But That was the day. It would be corned beef on rye. I'd put coleslaw and Russian dressing.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe a dab of mustard to give it a tang. So in today's world, though, I probably would go to pastrami.
Yeah, well, everybody has. Everybody's moved off corned beef. I mean, you know, at the club sometimes I'll do a Reuben sandwich for lunch. I can't tell you, when we do... Patty's Day, you know, inevitably you have some corned beef left over because you don't want to order short, right? and I'll put a Reuben on, and I'll sell one here, one there. You know, if I put a pastrami Reuben on, flies out.
And a Reuben is corned beef with coleslaw, and is it sauerkraut or coleslaw?
Sauerkraut.
Gotcha. But I'm telling you, you know, somebody
and
asked
Swiss
me,
cheese, but don't forget the Swiss cheese.
Really?
This, yeah, yeah.
Well, not the Jewish version.
Well,
come
you
on,
you guys don't know what the hell you're doing. I mean, it's like,
so somebody asked me what would be my, you know, go-to meal if I was leaving tomorrow, and one thing is a nice hot dog from a, and I'll say it again, from like a Jewish deli. I don't know, there was always something about you waiting for your either your sandwiches or you'd get cold cuts to bring home.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you'd have a hot dog while you're waiting.
Waiting, yeah, sure.
But yeah, a nice, you know, grilled hot dog from a flat grill. Again, like a corned beef or pastrami sandwich, but fresh. There's nothing like when it's just like.
Yeah, well, you know, the death penalty people are going to save a lot of money if you ever go, because it's pretty, you're a cheap date.
And then at the same time, again, Jewish ancestry really plays into my life, I guess. A bagel and lox.
Well,
bagel with cream cheese, tomato and onion.
That's in your
sliced
DNA.
Sliced thin.
That's in your DNA. It has to be, right? You know,
scooped out. You know, it's got to be scooped out.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah,
I
totally.
I did modify things, and this is a strange one. So I used to be, my bagel would have scallion cream cheese.
Right.
But then I realized I'm also putting an onion on it. Is that like repetitious?
Well, it's, you know, it's in the Lily family, but it's, you know, it's a different flavor. You know, I don't know. To me, raw onions, I just don't get it.
With a bagel, with a bagel and lox, it's
Wouldn't
just
you rather
something
have it grilled.
Not on a bagel and lox.
Really?
Oh my goodness! And for whatever reason, and you're the expert, why they use red onions many times at the in quotes appetizing store? They use, again, red onions on the sandwich, but then when you go to your herring and cream sauce, pickled herring, that's with a white onion.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Have you ever seen a herring that wasn't pickled? I mean, there's never been a herring that's not been pickled. It's unbelievable.
Do people eat shark? Because I was watching a TV show, Animal Kingdom. I don't know. It's a series was popular. So the guy says that sharks pee through their skin.
Yes.
So does that mean you don't eat shark?
No. And you know, every animal pees. It's just how you get rid of it, you know. Most, if you're going to eat shark, mako's the one to eat. The rest of them are kind of, I don't know, kind of, they pale by comparison. But mako eats a lot like swordfish. Excuse me, the same kind of texture and same kind of, not the same kind of flavor. It doesn't have quite as much flavor as swordfish. It's a little milder. But yeah, people eat shark all the time. But you know, I'll tell you a funny story about that. We had, you know, the reason sharks, I mean, pee through their skin is a little bit, you know, simplistic in what happens. They don't have bladders, so that's why they have to swim all the time, right? And so since they don't have bladders, they process the uric acid through their skin. And the result is when, you know, skate is in a shark family.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. They don't have the bladder and the, you know, the kidneys and all that. So they process the uric acid through the skin. And the good part about that is that they process it through the skin. They get rid of it. The bad part is that when you have like fillet of skate and it starts to get a little old, it smells like a wet diaper. You have a real ammonia kind
of. So I just got a call from Carrie. When she was in Iceland, they had fermented shark, which tasted really bad.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But there was no food at one point. But she said when you go to a bar or whatever and you have your fermented shark, it's followed with a beer so you can quickly lose
get the taste, right? Well, what's the point of eating it then? Just have the beer.
I guess there was no food. I have to research that while you're talking.
You know, they can buy potato chips, for God's sake. You know, it's a big deal. So anyway, quick story about the shark. I'm in a restaurant in New Jersey, in Princeton, years ago. And whenever I see skate on the menu, I order it because it's my favorite fish ever, right? So I ordered a skate, and it comes to the table, and I take that, you know, and had like a flour coating that was browned on it, you know, whatever. So I break into the skate, and it smells like a wet diaper. It smells like this ammonia thing comes, this cloud of ammonia hits me in the face, right? And I'm like, oh, no, man, a skate shot, you know. So I was with a friend of mine. He goes, you got to send it back. I said, I have to send it back. It's terrible smelling. He goes, oh, my God. So the waitress comes over, and I said, listen, you know, I think there's something. I think this gate's had it, you know. Could you just take it back and maybe get a new one or whatever, you know? So she smells it. She goes, oh, my God, I can't believe it, you know. I said, well, it's, you know, I'm in a business. It happens. It's not a big deal, you know. So she comes back out about 3 minutes later. She says to me, I don't know how to tell you this, but the chef said there's nothing wrong with the skate. And I said, okay, I'll tell you what. Tell the chef I will pay him $100 to eat it in front of me. And she starts laughing, right? She goes back in the kitchen. She comes back out. What would you like? I'll have the scallops. I'm easy. You know what I mean? Tell me there's nothing wrong with the skate. What are you? That's a Jerry Seinfeld line. What are you, hard of smelling? You know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Wait, so listen to this. So fermented shark, and I guess it's harkarl in Iceland, is a traditional dish known for its intense ammonia smell and strong pungent taste, frequently described as the worst thing.
Yeah, well, that, why are we eating it?
Usually a tiny cube is chewed before immediately washing it down with a shot of Brennevin, which is an Icelandic schnapps, or beer to neutralize the odor and aftertaste. It is chewy and typically tastes like ammonia soap or pungent cheese with a lingering unpleasant odor. The routine, locals and visitors often eat during winter festivals or for the experience. The trick is a quick chew followed by a strong drink to mask the taste. Origin, it is Greenland shark that has been fermented for months, formerly buried to remove toxins to make it safe to eat. Now, again, the question really goes to why.
You gotta be totally desperate, you know, I would think.
Well, we'll find an answer.
Do you ever have those people that go, smell this, you know, or taste this? I think it's bad. You know what I mean? No, you know what? I trust you.
You know, that's so funny because in advertising, they always say, and it relates to restaurants, a bad review goes a lot further than a good review.
Yeah, sure.
Negative. And it's the same thing when you dine at a restaurant. If you have you might go to a restaurant 100 times mm-hmm. and you love it. And then you go there once and you have a bad experience. Everybody knows about it. I mean, it's just like, that's crazy.
It's the town crier thing. I think people like to, I think what happens, and I see this now with all these reviews you see online, you know, the Tri-State Restaurant Group and all these other groups, these people are whining about this and whining about that. And most of it's negative. And I don't know. I think people want to matter. You know, they want to let everybody know that they're pretty sophisticated and they know food and everybody's a critic now. And it's not done the restaurant business any favors because a lot of this stuff is just, you know, opinions. You know, your idea of a great meal and mine might be different, you know. And so what makes you, you know, the person that we're all going to listen to? I don't think anybody listens to these people anyway, you know. But yeah, there's people on there that... that are like, what do they call them? Elite Yelpers, you know, that are constantly yelping about something. And I don't know. It just, to me, you know, when I hear somebody say I'm a foodie, all that means to me is that you run around and try a lot of stuff. That doesn't mean you know anything, you know. I look at foodie, you're a foodie. Yeah, I know, and I'm an astronaut, so what? You know, the bottom line is I think it's silly. And, you know, leave the reviews to the pros. And then, you know, the bottom line is if you have a horrible thing, you want to tell everybody about it, I don't understand why you want to do it. Because it's punishment, really. You know, I'll show them, you know. And a lot of times, you know, I see things, the place was overpriced. You don't know, what are you basing that on? You don't know the rent. You don't know the help. You don't know how much it costs for chicken and steak and this, that, and the other thing, you know. If it's too expensive for you, don't go there, you know. Don't go there, spend more money than you're comfortable with, and then complain, you know.
That's true. Well, to end our discussion about fermented shark, it says primarily out of historical necessity and cultural identity rather than for its flavor.
Well.
And they said historically, Iceland was a landscape where resources were extremely scarce, especially during the long, brutal winters. Early settlers needed a way to preserve every possible protein source. So,
yeah, I get it. So it's out of desperation, you know. And who wants their culture based on, food culture based on something that tastes bad? You know, it's like crazy. Anyway, I think, look, it's, you know, people do what they do. But shark doesn't taste ammonia-aided. when it's fresh. You know, I've eaten mako, I've eaten blue shark, I've eaten thresher. I've had those three. That's probably the only three I've had. But, you know, it's okay. It's kind of mild. It doesn't really taste a lot like anything else. It's just kind of, you know, neutral or whatever, you know.
So now I want to spin a little bit. So being a restaurateur, a couple of questions. I was watching a reel on Instagram, and it was talking about some different cost-cutting means in a restaurant. So
right.
The first was, you know, usually a bread basket is unlimited, but you don't want to overdo it. Is that true? Because if somebody loads up on bread, they're probably not going to order as much food.
Right.
So is that the case? I mean, you know, you sort of, you don't overabundant with so that the, if anything, they have to ask for it again.
Right. Well, here's my thought on bread and free things. You know, we're the only business that's expected to put free stuff out, you know. You're going to buy the fourth drink. You haven't bought me a drink. I've been here 3 hours. You know, how come I have to pay for the bread? You know, and I don't know why that is. I don't know how it's. I know how it started. I mean, people just started giving it to you, but I don't know why the expectation is like that. I mean, I've been to restaurants now where they're charging for bread. You know, if you want it. And the bottom line is, not everybody wants
and
it.
And I heard that's more in California than here on the East Coast.
It's getting there in New York too. You know?
Well, I know Farm Italy. There's a $15 appetizer, which is like
olives
a
or something.
No. It's actually it's like a bread casserole almost. It's like you pull it apart.
Yeah, Parker House rolls or something.
But it's basically in oil and garlic.
Yeah, yeah.
Butter.
I think it's fair. I mean, it's not like bread's free. You know, we don't buy it free. You know, we don't make it. I mean, you got to make it. You got labor. You got ingredients. You know. I have no problem paying for. I don't eat a lot of bread, so for me, it's not a big deal. But you know, there are people. I think that the rule of thumb that I used to follow was I put like 1.25 rolls out for everybody who's there. You know, if you get six people, you put 8, 9 rolls out. You know, 4 people, 6, whatever. 4 people, 5. And you know, the expectation. Can we have more bread? You know, and that's another thing. Now I've seen people charge for the second round of bread. You know, so I was in a place called Padrona in Boston about 6-8 months ago, and they have a whole bread program. They have a bread menu where you have choice of like 4 or 5 different types of bread, and they charge. It's like a menu price like anything else. And I thought that was an interesting take on it because you have, you know, it's not just people buying rolls, throwing, you know, warming them up and throwing them in a basket. I mean, you have a really well-thought-out bread program. And I think it's fair to charge for that, you know. I think it's fair to charge for the second. I don't really have a problem with a round of bread for people. I mean, I put focaccia out at Amano. We put rolls out at Allure and focaccia out at Social. But, you know, the bottom line is it's getting to the point where, you know, restaurants can't afford to do a lot of free stuff anymore because everything's getting so expensive.
Well, there's another way to look at it. You know, you fill a bread basket and then half of it's eaten, and you—I assume you have to toss the.
Yeah, you got to throw it out. What are you?
But so there's waste. But here's another cool question. You as the restaurateur, in today's world, especially in my world, I like to share.
Mm-hmm.
And most restaurants are not family style.
Right.
In quotes. So if I order an appetizer, that's sliders, and it comes with 3 sliders, but my group is 4.
Yeah.
Is there a way around that?
Yeah, you order 2.
Well, that's still a problem because if you're 4, then you get 6.
Right, cut them in half. You're an adult. Use a knife.
Oh, good. So then, you know, I know some restaurants, when it comes to like a shrimp cocktail, you can actually order it by the shrimp I guess, oysters and clams or whatever. So that was one thing. The other thing is plating. So plating can be very deceptive, much like a diamond ring.
Mm-hmm.
I was with.
I want to see how you tie these two together.
Okay, this is. You think I'm crazy?
Sometimes. Yeah.
So this is very interesting. So we were with a couple that just got engaged from Indiana, and the beautiful couple, just nice. The girl works for. One of the car companies that analyzes data or whatever.
Right.
And the fiance is an attorney. And I, how do you say it? They're not hippie-ish, but...
Did she have unshaved armpits?
No. And nothing about that. Right. It's just bohemian.
Oh, okay. There
so they actually designed the engagement ring, and it was like a large oval.
Right.
So if that was a traditional diamond, mm-hmm. it would have been mega bucks.
Was it zirconium?
But no, it was real. But it was a thin diamond to cover the dimensions of the. No, it was all real. It was just, it was bigger than what would, if it was square footage, the diameter was bigger.
Bigger than it was.
Right, but so I guess to make it economical, though, it was just not as thick a diamond.
So he was cheap.
No, I don't think so. This was a beautiful ring that they designed.
Right.
So where I'm going with this is plating.
Right.
So you can have a soup bowl that is... just a large vessel,
right.
Or you can have a shallow soup dish that doesn't hold as much. It could hold a cup,
right.
But it looks like a bowl.
Yeah, well, I mean, the greatest example of that, I think what you're calling, what you're referring to, as we were talking about before the show, is shrinkflation, right? So the greatest example of that is the martini glass. You know, you can have... you know, a 12-ounce martini glass, you can have a 10-ounce martini glass that looks like a 12-ounce martini glass. And that's where people are going. Hey, look, the bottom line is restaurants are struggling, you know. You know, everybody knows what the economy is. Everybody knows what the costs are.
So that's an incredible statement. So not attacking the restaurateur, I understand.
Right.
So if I'm your supply house,
right.
Should I be going to you and saying, if it's normally a 6-inch diameter cup, why don't you go with the 4-inch? And first of all, from the supplier,
yeah.
He's creating a need. And is that a mentality that goes on?
Some people do that. You know, I have an accountant who's a fabulous guy, great guy, great accountant. Kept me out of jail for the last 40 years, right? But he thinks he knows a lot about the restaurant business, you know? And, you know, from a number standpoint, he probably does. But, you know, that's not hard. It's math, you know what I mean? Yeah, your food cost should be this. Yeah, no kidding, genius. Try and get it there. You know, that's the other issue, you know? And he's constantly coming up with ideas that make me put my fingers in my eyes, you know what I mean? You get that thing when your glasses go up and your 2-4 fingers are in your eyes. So I think that, you know, when people, I mean, there's room for somebody, a salesman, to go, hey, listen, I got this thing. Maybe it can save you a couple of bucks. What do you think? Most of us know 10 times what the salespeople know, you know. And, you know, the worst thing is to be, I think, of a salesman is a champion of the obvious, you know, because you tend to kind of insult somebody's intelligence, or you have no idea what you're talking about, which is another one. Or you're trying to sell something that's... So I have a story about that. A guy comes into Coolfish one time, and he was from Cintas. I thought he said syntax. I thought my hostess said syntax. So I thought it was a tax guy who, at the time, I was looking for a different accountant. And I said, all right, let me go. By the time I got out there, I realized the mistake I made. Now I'm in the middle of this sales pitch, right? So this guy goes to me, Tom, comma. Yes, John. That mat over there, is it rubber-backed or is it plastic-backed? I'm like, I really don't know why. He said, well, ours are rubber-backed, so, you know, when you step on it, even if it's wet, it doesn't move, so people don't slip and the carpet stays right where it is. Oh, that's interesting. And then he goes, your mop heads, are they tied at the end or are they loose? I'm like, I don't know, I haven't looked. He says, well, ours are all tied at the end, so when you mop, you know, they don't like fray and they don't go. I said, listen, do you have a price list here? Because this is the most excruciating conversation I've ever been involved in. And I'm going to get violent if you say one more word. Okay, I can't do this. I cannot do this. So please drop a price list and leave before I hit you in the head with something really hard. You know, that's the kind of salespeople you can't tolerate. You know, it's just, it's hard. You get other people come in. And I have guys that I deal with all the time and will say, hey, listen, I got this new product that does this, that, and the other thing. Okay, that's fine to suggest it. But when they start to tell you how you're gonna save your business, I turn around, I walk away, I can't take it.
Understood. So here's another question. When you in an Italian restaurant, if they're walking around grating cheese or whatever, mm-hmm. or even if they provide some cheese to top your pasta or whatever,
right.
What type of cheese are they usually using?
Either Pecorino Romano or Reggiano Parmesan. Those are the two big ones. I mean, every once in a while you get somebody who does a grated, aged ricotta, like a ricotta salata.
That's a saltier ricotta. Yeah, yeah. What's the difference between the Parmesan and the Romano?
Well, Parmesan's cow's milk and Pecorino's sheep. So it's different flavors, you know.
Gotcha. And then here's an interesting one. Preparing pasta. You boil it in water and... That's where I was going. So salted water.
Right.
And that enhances, it brings out the flavor of the pasta?
Totally. I mean, they say that your pasta water should taste like seawater. Because most people don't put enough salt in. If you put a pinch of salt in like 6 gallons of water, you might as well just leave it out. You know, you're just wasting the salt at that point. You know, so we kind of make the water taste pretty salty.
Okay.
And what it does is, you know, When you're seasoning a dish, you know, dishes layers of flavor, right? So let's say you're going to make sauteed shrimp or whatever, right? So I'll season the shrimp before I put it in. You know, if there's a sauce going on, I'll make sure that sauce is seasoned altogether. And then at the end, I'll taste it to make sure it's all, you know, you're constantly putting layers of flavor in. So if you put very bland pasta under a sauce that's pretty well seasoned, it's going to dilute it a little bit. It's almost like adding water to your sauce, you know, so it doesn't have the same punch. But if you have a seasoned pasta and it tastes like something, now you got, you know, two
and
things.
And seasoned, what more than salt might you put in the water?
Nothing more. Nothing more.
So now...
And don't bother putting olive oil in there.
That's where I was going.
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to... So here's my question about olive oil.
Right.
So am I understanding it right that sometimes... pasta might be mass produced, so boiled, and then like kept in a holding pot, and then as orders
reheated.
Come in, you
yeah.
reheat it or whatever. So I was told, or the video I was watching, is to oil it so that it doesn't clump together.
Yeah, well, you oil it afterwards. Like if you're gonna make a bunch of pasta at home and you're not gonna serve it right away, right? What you'll do is you salt your water, you boil your pasta, you take it out, and you don't rinse it. You know, some people like rinse their, you know, don't rinse it. You know, you want that starch on it, right? Let it cool, and before it cools, you want to throw some oil on it and toss it so it doesn't clump together, and wrap it in Saran, and you're good to go. You know, then you can just heat it up in boiling water really quickly. But what I was getting to was. When people cook pasta, there's this wives' tale about, you know, put oil in the water, it keeps it separate. Doesn't. And, you know, the only thing that keeps pasta separate, like linguine, when you put it in, is stirring. So when you put it in, just stir it. Save the olive oil. Don't waste it. You know, olive oil is precious to me, you know. And it's a wives' tale. It doesn't work. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of oil. So if you put your pasta in there, penne, whatever, just make sure you stir in the beginning so it doesn't go to the bottom.
So if you're going to do that, even at home, I if you think I'm crazy or not, I'll make a larger portion of pasta than I'm going to eat
night,
and then I put it into one of those plastic containers or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Should it be al dente when I save it for tomorrow?
Yeah.
Because it's going to get heated up, and I guess it will...
Yeah, you want to... I mean, most pastas take, you know, between 10 and 12 minutes, you know. It goes pretty quick. You want to keep it somewhat firm because, you know, most of the finishing cooking process happens in the pan when you're tossing it with the, you know, the sauce as it continues.
You have much, much too much expectation from me.
All right, let me rephrase that. The finishing happens in the microwave when you put the sauce
in. I heat
in
the
it.
Pasta up. I probably put some sauce on it. I don't stir it through, and I stir it as I eat it.
All right.
I like the sauce, though.
I'm glad I don't eat at your house.
I wish I was eating at your house. And again, interesting things that happened this week. You talked about the restaurant that you went to for your birthday.
Yeah.
And understand that I decided not to wish Tom happy birthday on his birthday because everybody was. So I made sure that I said happy birthday the day after.
Yes, you did. Tax day. Yeah, it was, you know, I got, you know, Facebook's an interesting thing. I have 5,000 Facebook friends. I think I know 15 of them, whatever, you know. And I don't say that arrogantly. It's just that I use it for business and you know, use it for what I need to use it for. But it was it's really heartwarming when you have, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people wishing you a happy birthday. You know, it's, you know, you realize how many lives are entwined with yours, you know, through either the music or the you know, the restaurants or whatever, employees, ex-employees. And it's kind of, it's humbling and awesome at the same time because you get all these people wishing you well and what could be cooler?
Nothing. I'm really distracted because all of a sudden I look over your shoulder and there's cassettes laying on the studio console.
Uh-huh.
And then I see the reel-to-reel deck and the cassette player. But I'm really trying to figure out why, in this day and age, there's cassettes laying out on the table.
Yeah, I don't even know what happened with music. I mean, you can't buy records anymore. I mean, you can. They're out there, but, you know.
They're happening more and more, yeah. But still it's a special
thing. It's a streaming thing, right? Everybody streams, whatever.
And the craziness is, this is actually really crazy. If I'm not mistaken, Taylor Swift released some songs on cassette,
uh-huh.
Which meant that people would have to
go buy
either
a player, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I don't
who sells those anymore? Anybody?
I guess that's what eBay's for.
Yeah, I guess. You know, it's funny. I did an album 30 years ago, you know, that I had remastered finally. And I'm toying between, you know, trying to put it out there and not put, you know, it's a vanity project. It's basically for my head, you know. But it'd be fun to put a song or two out there. I just don't know how to do it.
I would love to get, I know you sent me the file. I need to get it again because they expire. But I would like to delve into your music. I am a big fan. I've seen you play probably as long ago as 20 years ago, in the day of Cool Fish, like 20 years ago.
Yeah, for sure.
And in the bar area, I once went to see you play with your band. And then over the years, at the Jones Beach Band Show, which, again, I don't think I'm making a story of this, but you were playing like Whipping Post or something to end the evening, and you were doing like an Allman Brothers version because it was going on forever.
Yeah,
and the crowd was loving it, and the powers that be were like trying to pull you off the stage. I saw them holding an envelope that looked like it had a check to get you off the stage.
What was funny was, you know, what they don't understand is that was Guy, you know, who owns All Music, a friend of mine, and he's in charge of the booking there, you know, and he kept down, was getting ladies, giving me the, you know, cross the neck thing. And I'm trying to explain to him, my guitar player and my bass player are both blind. I can't cue them like that. You know what I mean? I'm going to have to say, stop playing, you know, which is.
So just for a shameless plug, Guy owns All Music in Plainview. The front of the shopping center, he used to have a basement store.
Yes, yeah.
I think it's right next to Starbucks
as a
landmark.
Yep.
But now he has a full performance studio and retail store, which is behind the complex. So if you walk around Starbucks, you'll see All Music and an incredible selection of instruments,
yeah.
Specifically guitars and bass
guitars
or whatever,
and, basses, but
and accessories.
He has brass there. He's got saxophones.
Incredible collection, and he's a good friend of the radio station.
Great guy.
The radio station has a lot of opportunities where we get to meet celebrities and whatever, and he provides us with guitars to get signed or whatever. So we love you, Guy, and it's interesting how this threads in everybody's life. I would never have known that Tom had an affiliation with him, through his guitar collection, he does.
Yeah, he's actually a professional bass player. He had a band, I can't remember the name of the band, but a hardcore.
And
band.
He has a Steve Vai poster up in the store.
And but, just another plug. He's got a guy that works for him. His name is Ash. ASH, I think it's Ashley or something. I don't know his last name, but he's a guitar tech. He does all my work on all my guitars. He's magical.
Oh, I get to peek into his workshop.
Is magical, man. I mean,
it looks very cool.
Yeah, he's the best I've ever been around. He's as good as it gets, and he's another. He played professionally also, so he's got a real handle on it. And you know, he makes my guitars play like butter.
It's so cool. So, Guy sold me a. It actually was a bass. For some reason, somebody had returned it, but it's like a flag. A design on an acoustic bass.
Oh, wow.
And I was able to get it signed by Lynyrd Skynyrd, the band,
uh-huh.
Which is really cool because they actually wrote Lynyrd Skynyrd, you know, so you know what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the band members signed. What's really heartbreaking within reason is there's few, in quotes, original members. You got Ronnie Van Zant that plays.
There's no original members.
Is the brother of the of the I forget the
Johnny Van Zant.
Johnny Van Zant
is the brother.
And then
of
you
Ronnie.
Got Ricky Medcliffe, who's the
Medlock,
who's the guitarist with the long blonde flowing hair.
Yeah.
So their signatures are on there, and it's as meaningful as anything for me. It's actually very, 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 very special because. Carrie was a young widow, and her husband was a big, big, big Skynyrd fan.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess in memoriam to him, Freebird just always exists in her world or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
And I'm a really blessed individual. I first of all like to put a smile on her face to remove the demons from her mind.
Sure, yeah.
But her and her stepdaughter are big music fans. Her stepdaughter Nikki actually works in the music industry.
Oh, yeah.
She's a she does merch, but she's like the interim person between the artist and the management team, and she creates the merch and then works out the logistics of it being on site and everything.
Cool.
So really the two of them are big Skynyrd fans in memory of Carrie's husband and Nikki's father. So it's really weird in today's world. Skynyrd used to play at Westbury Music Fair annually. It was
a
big thing, and it was almost like the Jimmy Buffett thing, you know, people would hang out in the parking lot whatever.
Yeah.
So, but then that was probably 10, 15 years ago. Now, Skynyrd plays the beach and stuff. That went from 2,500, 3,000 to 15,000, which is incredible.
Yeah.
So
they sell it out too, right?
They do. They do really, really well. They're actually playing the beach again this summer.
Everybody's our age there.
Yeah. They're playing with Foreigner, I believe.
Are they?
Which is another band that has no original members.
Yeah.
But over the years, I've been able to provide Carrie with a meet and greet. Her and Nikki went backstage at Westbury, and I had given them a panoramic picture of the band, and each member of the band signed the picture and everything, and that's hanging in Carrie's. She has a pool table, pool room.
Yeah.
But flash forward, 1 year, Carrie got her whole family together, and they came to the beach, and they got to see Skynyrd, and again, it's like a tear fest, you know, for them it's an emotional thing.
Yeah.
But for her to go and have her whole family there, her two daughters, her son, and her stepdaughter, was really, really, really cool. And then we might have talked about this before, like, you know, is there something with these psychics and things floating out there? But her son, Jason, like, runs up to the stage at the end of the show, and randomly they gave him a drum skin.
No kid.
And so to me, it's just like a validation. There's so many crazy, crazy stories. Just on this tangent. So Nikki's once over in England on a semester abroad. She's sitting at a bar on her birthday, and she's flirting with some guy at the bar. And he goes, you know, do you have a gift for me? It's my birthday. And he goes, no, not unless you want a keychain license plate from New York that says Mark. Lo and behold, her father's name was Mark.
No kidding.
So I guess you can put stories together to your liking,
Sure.
But then you can hear something like that and you wonder. So again, I'm a like an eccentric romanticist. I like the pieces of the puzzle
forming
the story.
It is funny how it happens. I had a let me tell you something. You mentioned Foreigner before, right? So I had a friend who managed them.
I've met him, but please tell your story.
Yeah. So what happened was Bud was managing Foreigner for all the years that they were on top. And I guess it started with Billy Joel when he sued his ex-manager because the manager was screwing him out of money.
It was his wife's brother.
I know. It was kind of, sad for the guy, Anyway, so there was a trend where bands were suing the managers because the managers were doing these financial shenanigans or whatever, right? So, and Bud's nuts, right? And I'm thinking, oh, my God, because if anybody's going to screw the band, it's him, right, I think. So Foreigner sues Bud for services rendered or whatever, and it turns out they owed him $80,000. So they sued Bud, and he got an $80,000 check out of it. Honesty pays off.
So that's pretty cool. Now, I'm going to give myself a challenge. I've been very blessed in my life. It's meaningless, but it's just fun. I've gotten to meet a lot of famous people along the way, and Foreigner was playing at the Tiller Center, and there was something that was going on. I didn't get along with the marketing person there or whatever. She wasn't too thrilled with me. And believe it or not, she took me off the account.
Did you jump the line?
No. We just, she wasn't pleased with my
the delivery?
Ability to deliver stuff. So at any rate, I get invited to see Foreigner at Tiller Center. And my buddy Rob Rush, friend of yours, knows the tour manager. So get to go backstage, and I'm seeing the marketing person, and she's sneering over. So what the F is he doing back here? Whatever. But we're hanging out with the band or whatever. And there's not a lot of original members from Foreigner. And
well, they're all in their 80s.
Yes, and I forget the we'll keep talking, but I'll remember the one of the founders still plays with the band or whatever. But, it just was really cool. Now, go forward, Foreigner is going to be doing an acoustic set at the Tiller Center in September.
Oh, wow.
And, again, they're touring this summer as the regular thing.
Yeah.
But they have a Broadway show that's being developed, and I believe it's going to be launched at the Tiller Center.
Is it around their music kind of thing?
Yeah. So, I'm going to give myself a challenge. I would love in some means to get them to somebody from Foreigner to be on Playing With Fire.
That'd be great, yeah. Yeah, I met the guitar player. I can't remember his name. They used to play at the Talk House once in a while because he lives in Amagansett. He has a house out east. It'll come to me or you'll get it on
I'm going to look it up while we're talking.
Yeah, but it's funny. You talk about things that the weird things.
I think it's Mick Jones. We're going to find out.
I think it's Jones, but it's not Mick, is it? Anyway, I had a girlfriend years ago who got married,
It is Mick Jones.
Is it? Yeah, Mick Jones. Okay. Anyway, she had, we stayed friends over the years. I dated her 30 years ago, whatever it was. And we're still friends to this day. Anyway, so it turns out that she had a fight with her husband. Gets in a car. She lived in Island Park at the time, right? And just goes driving, they're back on the phone, back and forth. She's yelling at him. He's yelling at her. She's all upset. So she pulls in to a cemetery out east. She goes, I just want to go someplace quiet and sit down and think about my life and what I want to do, right? So she goes, so I drive into this cemetery. I'm driving around. I see a bench. She goes, so I sit down on a bench. I park my car. I sit down on a bench. I look down, and I see this gravestone that says Shardell, Frank. It's my father. Right? What are the chances, She met him like once, I think, whatever, before he passed away. And so she's telling me this story. She goes, what are the chances? I sit down, I see your father's thing there. I'm like, oh, my God. So fast forward about 2 years later, her mother's going to see a psychic. We were talking about the psychics before, right, and how this can all kind of come full circle here. And mother goes in for the reading. She's waiting outside. And mother says, well, listen, you're here. Why don't you go in for a reading? I'll pay for it, whatever, She says, all right. So she goes in, and the psychic, after a couple of, 10 minutes or whatever, she goes, I got a guy coming through, Frank. She goes, no, I don't know Frank. He said he had a son, Frank, his son Tom. He goes, oh, that must be my ex-boyfriend's dad. That's the only Frank I can really think about. He said, so he wants you to give his son a message. I won't tell you what the message is. It doesn't matter, right? So anyway, she calls me. She says, I got a message from your father. I said, you know, he's a pain in the ass, really, lately. You know, he's showing up everywhere, you know? But, I mean, what are the chances of that? It's just like nuts. It's a Twilight Zone deal, you know?
So to exit this far in a discussion, and that's crazy with, you know, what you just said. The gentleman that you mentioned was Bud Prager, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, at any rate, I'm going to challenge myself to see if we can make that happen. Just recounting my week last week, I ended up going to a family party for Carrie. Her sister and brother-in-law celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary, so they had people come in from all across the country.
Mm-hmm.
And the party was at the Inn at New Hyde Park, which I got to tell you, I don't remember it as being as nice a venue as what they pulled off that day. Usually I go to all these charity events and seated dinners or whatever.
Catering.
And the salad is terrible.
Yeah.
So they did something that I thought was interesting. It was a Roquefort and walnuts,
mm-hmm.
and then they rolled the lettuce in like a sliver of cucumber,
mm-hmm.
and I guess they dressed it well, because usually I literally never eat the salad. It just is terrible.
Yeah.
This was just like perfect, and it was a sign of what was to come within reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the food was great. The service was great. Again, it started out with a salad. It was a brunch on a Saturday brunch, and they had to start things off the orange juice and champagne.
Mimosa.
And then they had a pasta dish that was nice. And to do it nice, they came around and they, you know, offered cheese or whatever. Mm. And then you had a choice of anything from salmon and a chicken dish, a filet mignon, and a shrimp. But it was just, everything was really, really, really cool. Nice. And the pièce de résistance was, and it wasn't them, but they facilitated it, is one of the granddaughters and one of the daughter-in-laws prepared the cake for the
Oh, nice.
Which just gave some additional meaning or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
But it was just a cool, cool, cool affair, because there were a lot of young kids, anything from literally 18 months to, 12.
Yeah.
And they're all on the dance floor. The DJ just did it right.
Killed
you know,
it? Yeah.
Again, being married 50 years is sort of, you know, you're and I.
I didn't make 50
but the
weeks.
The DJ, like, you know, played real soft, started out, and then started getting the audience, the guests out on the dance floor, and then sort of ended it with a crescendo of catering to the kids, anything from the limbo stick or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But just a great, great party. But kudos to the Inn at New Hyde Park, who has been there forever, probably a couple of different ownerships over the years. But what they got going now, I really, just very, 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 very impressed.
Well, good for them. Well, listen, on that note, on a positive note, we're going to end the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last. Keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And let's look forward to some sunny days.
And an ongoing happy birthday, Tom.
Thank you, sir.
Come on now, everybody, get ready for a treat. It's time for stepping out for something mighty good to eat. You looking for atmosphere? Well, they got it happening here. They're doing barbecue the way it ought to be. Bring your sister, brother, significant other. Bring all your pals. There's always something smoking at Smoking Al.
Introducing Smoking Al's new fantasy platters. The whole gang can have fun feasting on each one of these enormous oversized platters, whether at home or in the dining room. Try the new Macho Nacho, the Bow Wow Wow, the Poo Poo Platter, the Caesar Pleaser, barbecue egg rolls, chicken wings, and a whole lot more. Smoking Al's Massapequa Park. For details, call 516-799-4900. And remember, there's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.
There's always something smoking at Smoking Al's.